Hello again. Still with me are James Brown, Minister of State, the Department of Justice, Breed Smith, People for Profit TD for Dublin South Central, and Gary Gannon, Social Democrats TD for Dublin Central. Now, we're going to turn to the persistent and growing levels of gambling addiction, and the most recent figures indicate that as many as 1 in 30 adults in Ireland have a problem with gambling at some level, and those working in frontline addiction say that that figure will continue to grow if something isn't done soon to regulate the industry. We'll hear more about the extent of addiction across the country shortly. But firstly, Minister James Brown, this is your area. Mm-hmm. You did set in motion a new bill to address this, but we've heard shifting deadlines. It was supposed to have been delivered by the middle of last year and then by the end of last year. Where is it at now, and when can you commit to it being in place?
So the legislation will go to report and final stage the week after next. Amendments are going to Cabinet next Tuesday, and the following week then we will do a report and final stage in the Dáil, near the final stages in the Dáil, and then move over to the Shannon. I think it should move relatively quickly in the Shannon. Obviously, I'm in the hands of the senators there, but I think there's, you know, the support right across the floor for this legislation, because it is, the situation is quite devastating in terms of gambling addiction out there. Our laws go back to the 1930s and 1950s. They're hopelessly not fit for purpose. I remember there was a hullabaloo about a casino open in Tipperary about 15 years ago and the damage that might cause. Every 10-year-old is going around with a casino in their back pocket right now. That's how serious it is. And the ESRI report out a few months ago, I think, demonstrated that addiction in this country around gambling is probably worse than any of our worst case fears.
Right, but doesn't that show exactly how urgent this
Absolutely.
Is? So can you explain, first of all, why it has been delayed this long, and why then you're so optimistic, with only about 90 sitting days left in the lifetime of the current Dáil, that it will get through?
So it's a huge piece of legislation. We're trying to regulate an area that effectively is not regulated in terms of licensing, but we're coming from a public health perspective. So we're also looking at anti-money laundering sections in there, child protection measures. We have a social fund in there, so we'll be levying the industry for education, treatment and awareness, and also a levy. So the regulator will be self-financing in terms of a levy as well. And a huge amount of transitional measures in terms of currently a lot of this is dealt with by the revenue commissioners.
Right.
It's actually a massive piece of
legislation. So the complexity of it was known at the outset, and the legal complexity. Indeed, there's several large legal firms in Dublin outlining the complexity of it and offering their expertise on it in the event of challenge. But in September 2022, you put in place a regulator, which was some distance back from when that regulator would be able to be up and running, and hundreds of thousands of euro, I think 2 million if you include the cost of office rental, have been spent on setting up the regulator. So why was it set up so early if the legislation to empower it was going to last so long?
Well, the regulator was set up early on purpose, because what I didn't want was a situation where the legislation passed and then we were waiting another 2 years for a regulator to be established and stood up. The aim here is to have the regulator up and running and dovetail with the legislation passing, and the CEO designate, Anne-Marie Caulfield, has been putting that team together. Again, we've about 9 full-time staff at the moment. They are civil servants until the regulator is established, so they're in the Department of Justice and under the governance.
So why was the part of the legislation to make the regulator self-financing not passed first? Because the industry could have been levied and the costs defrayed in terms of the setting up the regulator.
Because I think if we went down to kind of doing ad hoc bits out of that legislation, which is something that kind of happened in the past, you would delay the main legislation even further, because that's what you would end up being focused on in terms of getting it through all the stages in the Dáil. The other thing is, in terms of levying, you need to have to put the licensing regime in as well. So you do. But this, I am very optimistic this legislation will move very quickly once report and final stage. We do have over 60 amendments. It is complex. Solving those complexities has probably been a bit more difficult than we would have expected. And even a few areas have come forward that perhaps, you know, this was flagged for a long time. This legislation was coming, but some sectors didn't really kind of flag that they had concerns until quite late in the day as well.
It should be said that, you know, the staff in the regulator's office have been ready and willing for this legislation to come. The delay has nothing to do with them. And we have to assume that there's a programme of work there. But you mentioned delays and people coming forward with concerns about this. I mean, there's been huge lobbying on this, hasn't there, by the industry themselves. And is that the reason for the delay, that the industry has succeeded in delaying or has in some way secured amendments on this. Just explain why the delay has happened and what the nature of those approaches have been.
So there has been very significant lobbying in relation to this, and I've been criticised by those lobbyists for not meeting them or not meeting them more quickly. So I have, and I've tried to minimise the amount of them that I have met. Obviously, you do have to listen to every sector, and but we've been very steadfast in telling that sector they are going to be regulated. I could, you know, build another RT studios with the amount of letters I've gotten saying, "Minister, we fully agree with everything you're doing, just kind of not the bit
Please
that affects,
do.
But just not the bit that affects us," if you know what I mean. And that's nearly every single piece of sections within that bill. This bill is comprehensive. It is going to dramatically change gambling legislation in this country and gambling in this country, and for the better in terms of very strong public health measures. Okay. I'd like to have seen it pass by now. It has been that bit more challenging than we could have hoped. But as I say, it's a massive piece of legislation.
Gary Gannon.
I'm interested to hear the type of amendments that will be considered at Cabinet, because when it was discussed in 2022, the type of amendments that were made from the floor of the Dáil were related to the length of advertising. I think the advertising stops at 9 o'clock. Many of us didn't understand why we're allowing advertising after 9 o'clock. If I'm a person with a chaotic addiction to gambling, oftentimes that's associated with insomnia. That's the type of person that will be sitting up late, and they're the type of person who will be bombarded with the advertising. I would like to see that taken away. I think we should have a full 24-hour ban on advertising. There's also some muddying in the waters in relation to the type of events we may see, some sort of British sports coming through with gambling promotions on, in terms of how that might be dealt with. I mean, I think we've already passed that Rubicon when it came to advertising for alcohol, for example. We still see it on the TV and it doesn't impact us in any way, shape or form. So for me, this is a vital piece of legislation, and I commended the Minister at the time and continue to do so.
Do you understand the delay?
No, I don't understand the delay. And many of the questions I would have had the same tone as yourself.
Breed Smith, the delay to this, because, you know, I think reading an article back in February 2023, it was expected that it would be through by the middle of that year, fully passed and a regulator up and running by the end of last year. Do you understand the delay on this?
I have no doubt that the lobbying is causing the delay, and I can't prove that, but when you hear that he could plaster the studio with the letters that he's had on this bill, and the amount of lobbying, the minister himself acknowledges it. So if you take, for example, he keeps saying this is an enormous bill, it's a huge bill, big piece of work, it obviously is, but if you take, for example, compare that to the planning and development bill that's going through at the moment, 1,700 pages long. I bet you that'll go through before this Minister for Housing is no longer, even though it's an enormous piece of legislation and will have huge implications for what happens. But why they don't prioritise this, because as has been said by all of the people involved in the health sector about this, this is a hugely serious problem. And like Gary, I'm for banning the advertising altogether. In my community, in a small little village of Ballyfermot, there's about 7 gambling shops. Mm-hmm. Like, what is that about? And there's constant beaming of advertising at people to make it look sexy, attractive, liberating, the most exciting thing you can do, to bet on a horse or a dog.
Watch
or
a football game without.
Or cards. Yeah. Or watch a football game without it beaming at you all the time. It's really shocking.
Just you mentioned there, you haven't met with the representatives of the gambling industry, but have
political... I have met with some of them, but I've been tried to minimise that as much as possible, but you couldn't have a situation where you didn't meet any of them, I suppose.
Have you had approaches from political colleagues from any side of the divide whose approaches would have echoed anything that was being said by the industry?
Well, I've received a number of letters already into the department from TDs and senators.
Any of them look familiar?
Calling out for, I suppose, concerns they might have for certain sectors. And that, some of them is for the charity sectors, actually. Some is for the horse racing sector in particular as well, around, and most of them do centre around the advertising ban in terms of... I suppose the concerns they have that may have an impact in terms of fundraising. But I think, look, it's important to say that the staff that are there at the moment, they are full-time working staff, and they are under the governance of the Department of Justice. And I can assure you that the Department of Justice is ensuring that the work they're doing in terms of standing up.
Right. And nobody, I suppose, is in any doubt about that. But like the agri-food regulator, Niamh Lennon, who was appointed CEO designate in 2023, the Agriculture and Food Supply Chain Act was 2022 was passed in July 2023 but wasn't formally commenced until the end of that year, and she took up the role in January 2024. But while waiting for the legislation to give her power, she was given a role as the lead of the new Unfair Trading Practices Enforcement Authority. Was there any thought given to perhaps using the staff that's in the gambling regulators' offices in another way like that, whilst waiting for this legislation to be passed?
No, because I think that would have put us in effectively the same situation as if they weren't appointed in this particular case, because then they would only be starting the preparatory work once the legislation passed. Again, regulating an industry like the gambling industry, which is worth, I think, 6 billion euros alone in Ireland, and you have a whole international dynamic to it. You're looking at IT, you're looking
at
licensing.
Can I ask you honestly, are you frustrated by how long it's taken?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I had hoped to have this passed before now. It is an absolute priority for mine.
And are you happy you understand fully why it has been delayed?
I think, yeah, look, I do. Look, it has been challenging in terms of, I think, an awful lot of the transitional pieces that have to be put in place as well in terms of dealing with very, very old legislation.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of legislation that is existing there, and then you've got these massive gaps. And as I say, the whole public protection element of this that we've brought into it, when many would have thought we were just going to regulate an industry, but we're doing this from a public health perspective. Well,
on that note, because we don't want to lose sight of the fact that gambling is an addiction and has serious and devastating consequences for individuals and their families, I just want to bring in now Professor Colin O'Gara. He's a consultant psychiatrist and head of addiction services at St John of God Hospital. Professor O'Gara, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colin.
Could you maybe outline what predicament people are in, people who need this legislation to be brought in to protect them from some of what's driving their addiction?
Yeah, so it ultimately comes down to the level of harm. So there are hundreds of thousands of people in Ireland at the moment that are being affected by gambling harm. The minister mentioned there the ESRI figures. So, you know, there's 130,000 people that are severely affected, 279,000 people that have evidence of multiple problems of gambling harm, and then 15% of the population will endorse one negative experience with gambling. If you add that up, that's nearly a million people in Ireland that are affected by gambling harm. Now, that is an astounding figure, and it's one that I'm sure makes, you know, the industry wince every time we talk about it. But this was done, this study was completed by Pete London colleagues, Dermot O'Kelly, Shane Timmons, Deirdre Robertson.
I think it looked at about, there was interviews done, I think, over 2,800 people in the course of that interview. So it's pretty deep and pretty wide ranging, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, that's one aspect of it. That's the data. But on the other hand, you have the clinics that we work in. And in the past 10 years, there has been a dramatic increase in people presenting with gambling harm. And what that
means is gambling harm at its worst?
Well, at its very worst, it's a wife coming in to tell me that their husband, that they had no idea that their husband had gambled every single penny that they possibly had. And in some cases, had stolen money to gamble, sometimes from an employer, sometimes from family members, or sometimes from a family business. The problem, Colin, with this addiction as opposed to any other addiction is it's incredibly hidden, and it's not something that people can necessarily talk about. So what we have to do by getting this legislation in, we have to do two things. We have to, one, provide care for those who actually need it. And what that means is what they've done in the UK is they've rolled out gambling harm clinics. The most recent one was last month in Sheffield. And the second thing, as Minister Brown's colleagues there referred to, is we have to protect the next generation from harm, meaning that we have to stop this bombardment of young people in particular with ads.
And what effect do you think that regulation would have on at least stemming the flow to some degree of people entering services?
Well, it is going to save lives, because in the clinical and treatment population, international literature would suggest, depending on what country you're talking about, between 7 to 30% of people attempt suicide in this group, and 25% of people complete suicide in this group. So what we have is we have an epidemic of silent suicide associated with this. In essence, what we're going to do is save lives. There are umpteen families affected by this, not only here but in the UK. Gambling with Lives is a group set up by Charles and Liz Ritchie. Their son Jack, who's 24 years of age, died by suicide.
And I should point out at this stage that if anyone is affected by what we're talking about here today, both in terms of the harm or indeed the addiction aspects of it, rte.ie/helplines has some numbers that you can call if you're affected by it. I'm sorry for interrupting you there, Dr. O'Gara. You were talking about the Gambling with Lives in England.
Yeah. Look, obviously, yeah. This is a very, serious topic. And really, I think at this stage there is a consensus amongst politicians and the public that two things. One, we have to provide people who are run into trouble with these difficulties. And number two, we have to protect the next generation.
Well, just on that,
calling all politicians to get behind this and to help Minister Brown to get it through.
A mother, Claire in Dublin, says she has an 11-year-old boy. She says, we're already facing an uphill battle with internet access to phones and everything that comes with that. As a mother, I am pleading with this deputy to get this through. The idea of a casino in his pocket is terrifying to me. That generation is already a guinea pig population for the internet in their pocket. That's, as I say, from Claire in Dublin. Dr. O'Gara, I mean, you'd agree presumably with the sentiment of that, and do you believe that her fears are well founded?
Oh yeah, I mean 100%. I mean, I think at this stage the gambling harm is accepted. I think the lobbying that the minister has clearly endured and has, I have to say, pushed back against effectively to date, probably isn't enough on his own. There has to be impetus here. I'm looking at this since 2010. Minister Shatter's bill was in 2012, his white paper, and we're still waiting for legislation to come in. As a public health issue, this is unacceptable. We have to all get behind this and get this legislation through.
Okay, Professor Colin O'Gara, consultant psychiatrist and head of addiction services at St John of God's Hospital. Many thanks. And as I say, rte.ie/helplines if you want to contact some of the relevant helplines on that. Gary Gannon, you used to work in a betting shop and have seen some of this, at least, not on phones, but in person.
Betting shops and also on the race courses. Actually, once put myself through college. I mean, I went in there, was about 18, 19, would have seemed fairly harmless, but all of a sudden you'd see a person starting off the day betting 50 euros and by the end of the day they're outside the shop looking for 50 cents off people passing by. I mean, they're the type of things you would see on a regular basis. I do want to highlight another area where there's been an intense lobbying against parts of the bill, and that's in the offering of free bets and the enhanced odds for customers. I mean, I think it's vital that we, the minister, when we all hold the line in this area. There is no other kind of addiction in the world where if you, for example, drink yourself to the point where you fall on the ground, you wouldn't allow somebody to go off and hand someone a bottle of vodka.
No, it's reminiscent of the outbreak of the heroin epidemic in the 80s where free samples were handed
out. And I think it's vital that we hold the line on this. There are a number of scenarios where I've witnessed, I think all of us have witnessed, where a person has lost all that they have and all that their family have, and all of a sudden there's €100 a free bet in their account. I mean, where a person usually has the best kind of moment where they want to release themselves from an addiction is where they've gone beyond what else they can give, and all of a sudden there's another €100 in your account.
Bree Smith, what Professor O'Gara mentioned there about the need to provide addiction services, specialised addiction services in every province. You were mentioning there, people in your own constituency. What do you believe needs to be in place in tandem with this in terms of those services?
Well, absolutely, the services have to be there. I think we need a ban on the advertising. I think also the planning of how we run our cities and develop our communities should include a limit to the amount of gambling shops in the area. But then you've got the problem with online gambling, which is increasingly the way people go. But I'm actually quite surprised. Gary worked in them. I'm quite surprised at the amount of people that still go in and out of the gambling shops and hang around them all day. It's quite startling in working class communities how much that is a feature of the centre of their lives. I used to work in Dublin Bus. I was a shop steward, and bus conductors regularly spent a huge amount of the money they were collecting in fares.
They're frequently right next door to a pub as well.
Yeah,
when people's
exactly.
inhibitions are reduced by having
deliberately,
a few drinks.
They're deliberately put beside pubs. Deliberately, that's where they're located.
And then the coffee and the tea. I worked in the bookies around 2006, 2007, just as the crash was happening. And what the bookies did was stepped in and replaced the routines of other people who'd lost their jobs. So where previously a person would be leaving their house at 8 9 to go off to work, all of a sudden you were sitting in the bookies for 6-7 hours. The chairs got more comfortable, the coffee, the tea got better and the person was able to.
But just the point you asked, the question you asked me, we need to resource the local community drug task force and addiction task forces. They lost a huge amount of input, of funding and of resources and staff during austerity. That has not been fully restored to them. And Gary would know that well from the inner city task force and how that was treated. It is disgraceful the way the community sector has been decimated by austerity and not restored.
James Brown, another text in from Porrick in Dublin, but it's also been said here by the two other panellists, ban all advertising on gambling. Is that what this bill will do?
No, it won't. So the recommendation from the All-Party Justice Committee was to have a advertisement ban between 5:30 in the morning until 9 o'clock at night. So, in other words, have a watershed. And
yeah, how all encompassing is that? Because when people discuss, say, horse racing, they talk about the odds of the various horses running in the race. Are you talking about not saying that a particular runner in a race is 4-1 or 5-3 on?
That's factual information. So,
but it's factual information to what purpose? Is it factual information for how much the return is for gambling on it?
Well, it is, but the advertisement ban as recommended by the All-Party Justice Committee was for hard advertising. So that's advertising between, if you like, shows, so the ads you would see on various TV stations, and also in terms of online as well, that people would have to opt in rather than see those ads. So it is actually quite a powerful ban, one of the strongest in Europe, if not the strongest in Europe. The view taken by the Justice Committee at the time was not to go for a 24-hour ban. It's not to say that one can't come in a few years' time, because that's what the gambling regulator will be there as well. So while we're putting key principles into the legislation, the regulator is going to be very powerful in terms of being able to make recommendations, but also to bring people to court. There's up to 7 years imprisonment here for people who breach the regulations and the laws that are coming into place as well. It's a very robust legislation, but I agree we need to get it passed as quickly as possible.
But the Attorney General, I mean, as I said, read one briefing document by a legal firm saying that it's likely it will be challenged and is offering its services to people if they need to engage on this. I mean,
the industry has 6 billion euro to slosh around the legal teams.
Absolutely. And what the industry is also concerned about, what we're doing here in Ireland, is that it would become, I feel like, a flag bearer for other countries to copy. And that's why you're seeing, like, the 6 billion, strangely enough, is actually quite small for the gambling industry worldwide. But they're worried about what we're doing, that other countries will copy.
So the commitment today is, from the line minister on this, yourself, give us a date for when this is through and the regulator has the powers.
So it'll finish in the Dáil report and final stage a week after next. It will then go into the Seanad. I expect the Seanad to take second stage in May. I certainly hope to have it passed by the end of the summer, at the end of September at the latest. I am in the hands of the Seanad in terms of scheduling. I don't control that, but we should be able to move quite quickly after report.
And I think if your listeners are thinking that 9 o'clock seems somewhat of an abstract figure, I should also point out that the bookie shops actually close at about 9:22. So once you can't see the advertising in the shops, then you'll start to see it on your phone going home.
All right, Breed Smith, very briefly.
I think the listeners will struggle to understand the delay. The procedures in the Oireachtas are so cumbersome, but also if you've got a delay like this on something that's been sloshing around since 2010, 2012, and it's increasingly on a daily basis getting worse, I struggle to understand the delay. Mm. And I'm an elected TD in there for the last 8 years. And I can imagine what the listeners are, the frustration they feel about this.
Okay. What's on US military planes flying through Shannon? Does anyone know? Does anyone want to know? That's what we're going to look at next.